In April of last year, hundreds of thousands of people across Spain took to the streets to protest what many would consider to be too much of a good thing, tourism. Demonstrations in travel hotspots like Mallorca, Ibiza, and Barcelona led to some protesters duct taping hotel entrances and spraying tourists in the streets with water pistols. These were not isolated incidents. In an almost complete reversal from the standard travel marketing, the Netherlands launched the Stay Away campaign. Greece called for hard limits on visitors in small towns. Japan has introduced two-tier pricing for foreign visitors. And in Portugal, warnings have been issued that tourists may be the target of direct attacks from fed-up locals. Every single one of these economies are highly dependent on the revenue that tourism brings in. In particular, countries like Greece, Spain, Portugal, and even Japan have suffered with high youth unemployment, slow growth, and declining industries. Tourism should be a lifeline to fix this. It's a high employment industry, especially amongst young people in the service industry, and it's also an easy, sustainable way to bring in foreign money, which helps the whole economy. If tourism stopped in any of these countries tomorrow, their current economic problems would turn from a slowdown to a full-blown crisis. But that doesn't mean that this pushback is entirely irrational. Tourism has been changing dramatically, especially after the rebound from COVID-19. Ultra-budget travelers, cruise ships, Airbnbs, prepaid packages, and cultural shifts have all meant more local disruptions for less local spending. The cost-benefit for these communities is looking worse and worse every year, and if something doesn't change now, it could turn into a race to the bottom with no real winners.
From Japan to Greece, Iceland to Italy, country after country is coming down hard on Airbnb.
Thousands of protesters hit the streets in Barcelona to express anger at mass tourism.
Saudi tourists drove a Maserati down Rome's Spanish steps.
Thousands of people in Portugal have protested against uncontrolled immigration.
Tourism is powering the national economy as the good times roll. Down the road, very different experience.
So there are two parts to this problem. The first is why tourism has become so popular to begin with, and the second is how countries are reacting to it. After COVID, there was a wave of so-called revenge travelers, people who had not taken a holiday in more than a year, who just wanted to get out after being stuck at home. A lot of these travelers were simply people who had already booked holidays in 2020 or 2021, but then had them rescheduled due to travel restrictions. There are also just more tourists overall. Since the year 2000, the number of international arrivals has almost doubled worldwide. There are a few factors that have contributed to this. The world has a larger overall population, more people from developing countries like China and India can now afford to travel, and generally, travel has just become more affordable. Air travel is one of the few services in the world that has bucked the trend of inflation and is actually becoming cheaper over the years. Although that might be starting to change for the very same reasons of too much tourism to keep up. There are also factors driving tourism that are harder to quantify. Young people are finding it harder to finance major life milestones like buying a home or saving for retirement, so they're taking what money they do have and spending it on buying experiences instead. Even though this is clearly not sound financial planning, people are generally a lot more supportive of this spending because travel is considered as something that people just need to do. Even on personal financial forums, people are often encouraged to go out and travel while they're young, even if it would mean putting aside other financial goals or potentially even going into debt. Now, travel is amazing, but it's still just consumption like anything else that people spend money on. You might agree or disagree with this sentiment, and people should be free to spend their money as recklessly as they see fit. But that doesn't matter, because like it or not, more people than ever are spending money they don't even have to go and travel. Overseas holidays used to be the hallmark of a luxury lifestyle, or a rare treat for upper-middle-class families. But declining costs and more cavalier attitude towards spending money on experiences has made tourism as popular as it is today. Now, for the countries and cities receiving a bulk of this tourism, this looks like a fantastic opportunity, but there have been some problems. The most ideal tourist is simply one who spends a lot of money and doesn't cause many disruptions. It sounds crude, and I'm sure the backpacking, hostel-dwelling, budget travel crowd may not like it, but this is what peak tourist performance looks like. a small number of people enter the country, pay out loads of money to well-staffed services, and then leave. For certain countries, these types of travellers are all they're interested in. On the most extreme end, the Himalayan nation of Bhutan has directly legislated a tourist policy of high value, low impact. They charge each individual tourist $100 USD per night before other regular travel expenses like flights, accommodation, and food. This money is paid directly to the country's national treasury, where they can claim it's used to promote social, environmental, cultural, and economic development. But it also serves another purpose. It's a barrier to entry. $100 a day automatically disqualifies most budget travelers, which means that the only people left over are those who are not concerned by an extra few thousand dollars for a couple's trip in the mountains. This also means that most hotels and experiences in the country cater exclusively to high-income travelers, which in turn makes Bhutan even more expensive to visit. Offerings like the ultra-exclusive Aman Kora lodges are also charged an additional $65 per day per guest, on top of yet another $40 free independent traveler surcharge for tourists who are not specifically monitored by a set tour group. That all gets passed along to guests, which is why the rates start at $1,700 per night. Now that's a lot of money, but what this does is allow people working in tourism services to earn better incomes. It also means that naturally fewer people travel to this extremely expensive destination, and that's not a bug, it's a feature. For locals, it's nice not to have their streets full of gawking tourists with selfie sticks. But the ultra-high-end tourists also appreciate the exclusivity. Whether it's to actually enjoy the tranquil mountains, or whether it's because the European summer has become too mainstream and accessible, an ultra-exclusive club always has an allure to wealthy patrons. This has worked well for Bhutan, but its total tourism industry and its entire economy for that matter are extremely small. So what is it like for countries that have to rely on more mass market tourism? Japan has seen an increase in overseas arrivals to a level that has been truly unprecedented in modern history. In just the last 10 years, the number of international visitors to Japan has almost tripled, and in a country that was short on space at the best of times, it's struggled to keep up. To be fair, some of this spike was caused by built-up demand from people who couldn't travel during travel restrictions, but there are other factors as well. The government has seen the foreign revenue opportunity and has made visa applications more straightforward. There's always the statistical significance of weebs, and above all else, it's cheap. The declining value of the yen, prolonged stagnation within Japan, and minimal inflation over the last two decades means you can get much more holiday there today than you could even a few years ago. This has had the opposite effect to Bhutan's extreme selectiveness. Budget-conscious travelers are now choosing Japan as the budget-conscious destination, which has made the top-line nominal figures look fantastic, but under the surface is causing some major problems. Tourism is simply a service export. Money flows into a country from abroad, and the tourists get a service in the form of all the work that's done to make their holiday enjoyable. Hotel staff, tour guides, taxi drivers, restaurant waiters, and even that nightclub bouncer there to turn away the boys from Brighton. They are all technically providing services exported to foreign customers. But like all exports, some are more lucrative than others. Hospitality business, airlines, and now even entire countries are all going up market as they realize an unpopular truth. A budget-focused tourist who stays in a capsule hotel or an Airbnb lives off 7-Eleven egg salad sandwiches and has an itinerary filled with free locations to get a nice photo are simply not contributing as much financially as someone who stays in a high-end hotel with more staffing, eats at a restaurant, and keeps to private, curated experiences. The differences can be staggering. One high-end traveler can easily create an order of magnitude more revenue and employment in the host country while having a similar impact on the lives of everyday residents. This is an extremely hard reality to even acknowledge. Nobody wants to openly come out and say that their country is only for rich people. But they also serve their citizens, and their citizens are rightfully fed up with their home becoming a theme park, especially if they get nothing in return for it. If they can accommodate a fraction of the foot traffic while maintaining a majority of their revenue, they would be irresponsible to not consider it. And there's something more to this as well. Wealthy travelers simply don't want to visit places that are overrun by other tourists, especially where travelers are potentially facing backlash from locals for the problems they're causing. This ironically means that too much tourism can starve areas of revenue from tourism. Destinations that can show that they're quiet, safe, and above all else, exclusive, are already attracting wealthy visitors regardless of their price tags. But the good news is that it doesn't have to be this extreme. There are better ways for countries to benefit from tourism than just by making it for the rich. If maximizing revenue isn't possible from budget-conscious travelers, then a better approach is to minimize their impact on local communities. One of the biggest steps that local cities across the world are exploring is cracking down on Airbnbs or other informal tourist accommodation. These converted homes directly displace local residents and long-term renters because it's usually more lucrative for property owners to pursue short-term rentals. Short-term rentals also don't employ nearly as many people as even a basic hotel, which will have desk support and housekeeping staff. Airbnbs usually come equipped with kitchens, which means that the travelers are less likely to eat out at local restaurants, further reducing their direct contributions to the local economy. But even still, there's been one last trend which is even worse than short-stay rentals. It wouldn't be a micro video without mentioning the shipping industry, and cruise ships really have caused a lot of problems. When tourists book a holiday on a cruise ship, most of their money goes to the cruise company itself, which then covers food, accommodation, and entertainment. Local tours at predetermined stops along a cruising route are also usually booked through the cruise company, which means the only source of revenue for the local economy comes through the multinational shipping company and their preferred agents. When a ship like the MSC World docks at certain smaller European ports, her 6,850 passengers can represent as much as 10% of the city's population for the few hours they're in. Despite problems of overcrowding and local disruptions, these ships are also terrible for the environment, which has made them the target of local frustrations. Most of these locals understand that local tourism can be good for the local economy right when they need it the most. But just because something has the potential to do some good doesn't mean that overdoing it is the best solution. As cities react to this, more taxes, two-tiered pricing, and regulations are already being enforced. It probably won't be popular, but it might be what is necessary to make sure locals aren't pushed out of their own cities, workers actually benefit from tourism, and the tourists themselves get an enjoyable holiday. Or, you know, maybe we can just wait for the population collapse that everybody seems so worried about. Go and watch this video next to see why it's probably not going to be as bad as you're getting told. And make sure to subscribe for more micro stories with big impacts.